This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Yeah, this defensive corpse, as you said, like whoever's playing or whoever is healthy enough or has gone in, and we've all just tried to compete hard and battle hard and try to help this team win games.
Jets defenseman Tucker Poolman. That was prior to last night's contest against the San Jose Sharks. He returned to the lineup after being out injured for a number of games. The Jets defense, pretty much healthy. Almost for the first time this season, they have eight defensemen at their disposal, leading to some lineup decisions for Jets head coach Paul Maurice. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg with you. And Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and been serving quality home-style food since 1985. That's 35 years. Wow. Simple math there, but that's 35 years. That's a long time. Good for them. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long and all weekend long, visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon Avenue. That's in the Cordon Village Mall. So, Mr. Ginsberg, you got eight defensemen. Seems like they're more or less all available. Sammy Niku, question mark if he's dealing with something. Who are your six defensemen tomorrow night entering against the Blackhawks?
Yeah, and we don't really know what he's dealing with, how severe it is, right? So, Obviously, I'm going to pick Sammy Niku over Lucas Sabiza. If it's straight up between Niku and Sabiza, I'm going Niku. But, you know, what I'm probably more interested in is Josh Morrissey and Neil Pionk has been a pair lately. And I'd like to see Tucker Poolman back up with Josh Morrissey. And I'll tell you why. I realize that, you know, Morrissey and Poolman have struggled. And, you know, The Athletic touched on this when Jacob Trouba was in town on Tuesday. Dom Luchishin had an article and he detailed kind of why not just Josh Morrissey has been struggling, but Jacob Trouba as well. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's fairly obvious. I mean, Josh Morrissey's had to do heavier lifting this year as opposed to Jacob Trouba, right? And you know, they talk about puck retrievals and, you know, rushing the puck up the ice and just the type of defenseman Jacob Trouba is. Morrissey and Trouba, I think, you know, now that Trouba has moved on to the Rangers, the Jets have traded him, obviously, I think you don't appreciate what he did as much. And I realized last week, you know, when we were previewing the Jets Rangers game, we were talking about, you know, well, you know, Trouba's offensive numbers are actually not as good as Pionk's and all that. And I personally still think Trouba's a better defenseman than Pionk. I really like Pionk. And I'm going to point out now, if you go back and look at my Twitter feed at the time of that trade, I said it wasn't going to be that bad. And I took a lot of flack for that. And it's turned out that I've been right. Don't get me wrong. I've been wrong many times before.
And don't go back in like 8 months into someone's Twitter feed. Find something else better to do with your life.
All I'm saying is when that trade was made, most people thought that that was a bad trade for the Jets. And all I said was, I think Pionk is a guy that could probably play in your top four. And then obviously Ville Heinola, we didn't realize that, you know, he was going to play for the Jets and all that. All I'm saying is, even despite, you know, Pionk playing really well, playing on the PP1, I just, to say Pionk is a better defenseman than Trouba, I don't agree with. That's all I'm going to say. But when you're talking about Morrissey and Poolman, I think that there is a chemistry there, and it's more of a shutdown pair than when you put Morrissey and Pionk together. And it's not just size. I mean, obviously, Poolman's got the size and the physicality. I would rather see Poolman on that top pair with Morrissey, because I think you got to get Morrissey going. I really do.
Who is your, less so the top pairing? I mean, is Dmitry Kulikov, he had a tough game last night, is he a fixture in your top six? Or can you make an argument for
right,
one of the...
Right now, yes. Yeah, and I realize that he didn't have a very good game last night, but, I mean, for me, Kulikov, based on what you have now...
He's still one of your best six.
Now, to me, Brendan Dillon looked good last night. Like, I would have no problem with Brendan Dillon in my top six.
Sure.
Like, I'm not saying the Jets are going to trade for him. I mean...
Let's be honest, Ezzy. Basically, anybody the Jets that are going to acquire on the trade market, if they're going to acquire a defenseman, is better than somebody they currently have in their top six.
Well,
I mean, it's a little blunt, and obviously I'm not talking about the Morrissey's and the Pionks.
Right.
But basically anybody is going to be a better defenseman than Spezza, Petetto, Kulikov to some extent.
Like, to me, what I would like to see right now is I would like to see the top pair, Morrissey Poolman.
Yeah.
I would like to see the second pair, Dmitry Kulikov and Neil Pionk, And then your second pair would be Sammy Niku and Nathan Beaulieu.
Your third pair, the Sammy Niku and Nathan Beaulieu.
So that's what I would do right now based on who the Jets have.
So Spies and Boteto are your two odd men out.
Yes. And I mean, when you're healthy, those should be, I mean, Nathan Beaulieu to me, I think deserves to be in the lineup right now. I think he's played pretty well on that third pair. But look, at when you're talking about the Jets defense, it goes back to what we've been talking about now for a couple of weeks, even 4 weeks. They are in need of an infusion on defense. And, you know, to me, Alec Martinez, I would have no problem with that. I mean, I think he's a good defenseman. He's got a year left on his contract. Mm-hmm. I mean, Dylan DeMello on Ottawa, I like him a lot. I think he could play in your top six, no problem. I think he would give you a boost. There's a few guys, and you know, when you're talking about, you know, some of the other names out there, yeah, obviously Matt Dumba or Jonas Brodin would look good on the Jets, but are the Wild, is Bill Guerin going to make a trade in division trailing a team by a couple of points?
Nor are the Jets going to... I don't think the Jets are it would be so...
Do you have to give up a guy like Jack Roslovic to make that happen? Like, I don't know if the Jets want to do that.
That's not... They've never... There's been no evidence that the Jets are ever going to make a quote-unquote hockey trade with that level of splash. The last time they made a hockey trade to that effect was the Kane trade, and there was extenuating circumstances around that. So,
well, I mean, you've traded, I mean, Paul Stastny and Kevin Hayes.
Yeah, but that's not taking a guy off your active roster and to acquire them.
Sure.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. To get a Dumba or to get a Brodin.
Yeah, you have to trade
a
roster
guy
player.
from your roster.
I don't know why Bill Guerin is trading one of those two, either of those two guys, because those are his two best defensemen.
I wouldn't
aside from
them.
Ryan Suter.
Well, I wouldn't make that trade. It's a strength on your team right now is those guys.
Like Matt Dumba to me is, you know, I don't know if he's a top 20 defenseman in the league, but he's probably top 25, top 30. Like he's a really good defenseman. So like, and he's had a good year after he was injured towards the end of last year. Right.
Yeah.
And I realize there's salary cap. I think Brodin's only got 1 year left on his contract.
That's right.
if I'm not mistaken, he's
UFA after next season.
But Dumba's got, I think, 5 years left.
Dumba's got 3 years after next season. But the point is...
Yeah, so four including this year, yeah.
Your defense is the strength of your team in Minnesota. I'm not sure why you necessarily want to blow that up.
Right.
That's not going to be a realistic acquisition for the Jets at this point in time. And I don't think either of those guys are getting traded. Because those trades rarely happen at the deadline. Those guys aren't... There's no urgency to make that trade from Minnesota's perspective.
If your second pair was Alec Martinez and Sammy Niku, your top pair is Josh Morrissey and Tucker Poolman, and then your third pair is Dmitry Kulikov and Nathan Beaulieu.
You forgot Neil Pionk. I mean,
I forgot.
Yeah. I mean, one more defenseman adds so much to this Winnipeg Jets lineup. And the question is, do they add that defenseman between now and 10 days from now, the trade deadline, or do they add that defenseman in the offseason? And that's the big uncertainty surrounding this team at this point in time.
I think you have to do something prior to the trade deadline just because you're in a playoff race right now. You probably will win your next couple of games, hopefully.
Well, if you don't, let me put it this way. If you don't go on a run, if you don't do something by the trade deadline, the next five games are all very winnable. And they're all against teams not in a playoff race. And they're all games you should at least win. Get 8 or 9 of the next 10 points.
You got to think, though, that Chevy wants to make, if he can, obviously that's the big if, like if the right deal is out there. And, you know, Weber talked about this last night on the broadcast that the Jets are interested in a guy like Alec Martinez. Like, you would have to think that Chevy is thinking strongly about pulling the trigger on that move, like in the next few days. Why does he have to wait till the trade deadline? It makes no sense to me. I don't think you need to wait till the trade deadline.
No, if you can get one of those guys for an extra 5 games, make the deal.
That's what I'm saying.
It's not in the Jets' MO to be necessarily proactive on the trade market. I mean, when they acquired Stastny, that came out of the blue, but that was also on trade deadline day. So they haven't made a move, you know, weeks in advance before. But if there was ever a time to do it, it would be now, because you get that infusion of talent into your defense, into your roster, as you enter the next 5 games, all of them crucial for your chances and your hopes and your dreams to get back into a playoff race. When we come back, the Minnesota Wild were the latest team to make a coaching change. Came out of the blue yesterday as they dismissed Bruce Boudreau. We talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Tough day today here with the Minnesota Wild. We've relieved head coach Bruce Boudreau of his coaching duties. I'd like to thank Bruce and his wife Crystal for 4 years of dedication to the Minnesota Wild.
Minnesota Wild General Manager Bill Guerin making the announcement yesterday that Bruce Boudreau was no longer going to be their head coach. Sort of came out of left field. This is a Minnesota Wild team that nobody really had any expectations for this season. They've been on a recent good stretch, 6-3-1 in their last 10. However, on, was that Tuesday night? Thursday night. Pardon me, getting my days confused. Thursday night, they had a sizable lead against the New York Rangers that they saw dissipate quickly, blowing a lead on home ice, losing 4-3 in a shootout to the Rangers. And I guess Bill Guerin had had enough, decided to make a big move and dismissing Bruce Boudreau as head coach. Surprised?
Huge surprise.
Really?
Of course.
Okay. I was surprised too.
And the reason why I'm, and it's all timing, right?
Yeah.
Because I remember at the beginning of the season,
yeah,
when we were talking about coaches on the hot seat,
yeah,
who was number one or number two on most lists?
Bruce Boudreau.
Bruce Boudreau, right?
New general manager coming in, didn't hire him, not his guy, quote unquote. You know, Wild team everyone thought was going to be struggling, got off to a poor start this year and stuck with him. And then all of a sudden they start playing some better hockey and they're on the fringes of the playoff race. And he decides to pull the trigger after blowing a 3-1 third period lead.
Right. And for anybody out there, you know, that thinks that Billy Guerin pulled the trigger on this move based on that one game, I mean, they're mistaken. I mean, this is something that obviously...
I don't think that game helped.
Well...
I don't think he made the
Bill
decision.
If Bill Guerin is firing Bruce Boudreau based on that one game, then that's a stupid decision to make. And I think Bill Guerin, I really like Bill Guerin. I think, you know, he did a really good job in Pittsburgh, and obviously he was a great player, but I mean... How many other coaches would have Minnesota where they are right now? And, you know, Michael Russo of The Athletic wrote about this. When you're talking about, you know, this team, I mean, we know they're 7-3-1 in their last 11, mm-hmm. right? In their last four games, yes, they lost to the Rangers and they lost to the Avalanche, but they also beat Vegas 4-0 and they beat the Dallas Stars. Like, the Stars and the Golden Knights are good teams.
Yeah.
And the Wild, I think, are playing very well. And when you, it's when you look at the eight coaches that have been fired this year, mm-hmm. how many of those coaches were fired with goaltenders that have terrible save percentages? Like when you're talking about, like, Devan Dubnyk's a great goalie.
He hasn't been this year.
But he hasn't had a good year. Alex Stalock.
Yeah.
Right? I think he's a good backup goalie. He's also had ups and downs this year, right? Like, when you look at the San Jose Sharks, Arundel, Martin Jones, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You look at the New Jersey Devils, John Hines.
Yeah.
Like, you look at Mackenzie Blackwood and Corey Schneider.
Yeah.
Look at Nashville with Peter Laviolette, Pekka Rinne, Yusei Saros. Like, what's the theme here? Like, what am I getting to? All of these teams have had mediocre to below average goaltending. So what I'm saying is, not only is Bruce Boudreau a great coach, like, at this point in the season, the fact that you're, 2 points, 3 points out of a playoff spot, right? Like, you're battling with Winnipeg and Arizona and
Nashville.
Nashville.
Yeah, we know the teams.
Like,
yeah.
like, why make this move now? Like, it's very peculiar because it's not like, you know, the Wild have lost 4 in a row or 5 in a row or even 2 in a row.
They've been playing well.
7-3-1 in their last 11. That's why I'm surprised, because I think Bruce Boudreau has done a hell of a job this year with this Wild team.
Of the teams with the 7 worst save percentages, team save percentages in the NHL, 4 of them have changed coaches.
Right.
2 of them are on first-year coaches, which you're not going to make a change that quickly. And the last team, and it doesn't matter, is Detroit.
Was Anaheim one of those teams?
Anaheim is not one of those teams. So the Red Wings have the worst team save percentage.
Right.
Jeff Blashill is still their head coach. I can't see him being the head coach next year. I think they're just, I'm giving him the end of the year. Because
Ottawa's the other team?
The Kings are 30th. They have a first-year head coach. The Sharks are 29th. They obviously fired their coach. The Devils are 28th. They fired their coach. The Predators are 27th. They fired their coach. The Panthers are 26th. They have a first-year coach in Joel Quenneville. They're not firing him.
They also have a $10 million goalie.
He's been pretty bad, though. And the Minnesota Wild, they were 25th, and they just fired Bruce Boudreau. So you're only as good a coach as you are, as your goaltender is a success.
But you kind of are, right? Like, that's why, you know, I was referencing Michael Russo, who's obviously, you know, a good friend of the show, you know, great journalist. He has his pulse on the Wild.
Yeah.
And, you know, he talked to Craig Custance and some other athletic writers, and, like, they were all surprised.
Sure.
Because of the timing. Like, if you're going to make that coaching change, Drew, why not make that back in November?
Well, when,
like,
the team was struggling.
Yeah, like, why now?
Well, do you think, I mean, so Dean Evason is the interim head coach.
Shout out to Flin Flon.
There you go. You're a hometown boy. Do you think Dean Evason is going to get any better results out of this Minnesota Wild team than Boudreau was?
Well,
I mean, they're not better than that. That's my point. I know they're not better than a 7-3-1 team in their last 11 games.
Right. And, you know, Dean Evason was a longtime head coach, obviously played in the NHL, but a longtime head coach in the AHL.
Yeah.
With Milwaukee, right?
I think so.
And when you're talking about, you know, he's been an assistant for the last couple of years under Boudreau, and, you know, he's the interim coach.
Yeah.
He always could be named head coach, but right now he's been named interim coach. But I think when like, they're 7-3-1 in their last 11. Like, they're playing well. Like, we talked about it. They defeated Vegas. They defeated Dallas. Yes, it was a tough loss to the Rangers, but, I mean, this team has been playing above 500 for the last couple months. So, you know, can Dean Evason get more out of them? I mean, it's possible. I haven't looked at their schedule, but it's a dogfight to get into the Western Conference playoffs right now.
Look, it's perplexing to me. Boudreau, I mean, I don't know. I can't see that a new coach is going to come in and change anything. You are what your record is, and the Minnesota Wild, I would say, have exceeded expectations. We talk about exceeding expectations or matching expectations or below expectations when we evaluate players. When you look at the Minnesota Wild as a team, as they currently stand right now on whatever day it is today, the 15th of February, 27-23-7. Did anybody think that they were going to be better than that? They've won a little less than 50% of their games. That's probably where we thought they'd be. You know, did you think the Wild were going to have 33 wins at this point in the year?
Also,
no.
You know, Bill Guerin just traded Jason Zucker, right, for Alex Galchenyuk.
And a first-round pick in Kalen Addison, and we'll talk about that deal a little bit later on.
Right, and I think that's actually a good trade for the Wild. I think it's a good. I think it's one of those trades that I think both teams win.
Well, if Kalen Addison develops on the blue line as, you know, he was a former first-round pick of the Penguins. If he continues to develop, and if that first round pick, you know, is able to develop a few years down the road from now, yes, it's a good trade.
It's a lot to give up for Zucker, but Zucker's a really good offensive player. That if you put him with Sidney Crosby,
Zucker's going to
absolutely light it up. But the point is, you just made that trade, and that's what's also a little bit strange to me. Like, didn't you want to see how that trade? Like, what was that 4 days ago? Like, yeah. Didn't you want to see like how the team was going to react for a couple of weeks before you decide, you know, whether or not Bruce Boudreau's the guy to lead this? Like, and then you hear about like Bill Guerin didn't like some of the line combinations, and he didn't like the way Matt Zuccarello was playing under Bruce Boudreau. Like, last time I checked, Kevin Fiala's having a career year. Like, does Bruce Boudreau get any credit for that? Like, it's. You know, and again, it goes back to what I said. I like the Galchenyuk trade. I mean, Zucker's a better player than Galchenyuk, but, you know, you get Kalen Addison, good Manitoba boy. You know, he projects as a pretty good defenseman in the NHL, was great at the World Juniors. You get another first-round pick. Like, Zucker was a guy that Paul Fenton was trying to trade. We know that. So
tried
like,
to trade Zucker three times before they finally did it.
I don't know why you don't wait until the end of the year to make this move.
I don't disagree. Quickly, last one. Artemi Panarin's shootout goal, should have it counted?
No.
To me, it's no-brainer. He definitely goes forward and backwards, yeah. Which is against the rules.
No goal.
Why does the NHL have rules if they don't seem to know how to enforce them?
Get rid of the shootout. Make the 3-on-3 overtime 10 minutes.
Well, you've been talking about that forever. It's not going to happen. When we come back, Lisa Dillman is going to join us. She covers the Los Angeles Kings for The Athletic. The Kings are going to be one of the most interesting teams to watch at the trade deadline, which is 9 days away from now. There's also an outdoor game tonight. Did you know that?
Yes.
Okay, we'll talk to Lisa about that as well. The Kings and the Avalanche playing at the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, hour number 3 on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290, the home of the Winnipeg Jets. Tomorrow evening, the Jets and the Chicago Blackhawks. Note the start time, 7:30 p.m. puck drop coverage here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program from TheAthletic.com, Lisa Dillman joins us on the line. Lisa is in Colorado Springs, where there's an outdoor game tonight between the Los Angeles Kings and the Colorado Avalanche, taking place at the Air Force Academy. Lisa, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me on. It's great to be here. I'm suffering a little bit from the altitude, but either that's me being out of shape or being old. But the players were actually all talking about it yesterday, and we can talk about that when we chat here.
Yeah, let's start with that. Obviously, we want to talk to you about the Kings as well, and the, you know, the trade deadline being 9 days away and a lot of attention on that Kings roster. But you know, this outdoor game is certainly unique. It's taking place at a high elevation in Colorado Springs. So how much of a concern is that for the players? How much and is anything being done that's, you know, maybe unusual to see at an NHL game to deal with the altitude?
Well, and somebody said to Jonathan Quick, said to him yesterday, you know, what can you do? What can you do to get used to this? And he looked at them. He goes, hey, there's nothing we can do. There's no adjustments you can make. And you can't, you know, snap your fingers and get used to it in 24 hours. I think, you know, basic hockey 101, shorter shifts, monitoring the bench, you know, just kind of be mindful of the guy's condition. And Todd McClellan was pretty funny. He said, yeah, I saw a lot of red faces out there today. And, you know, they always like to say, you know, the other team goes through it too, but you know, obviously the Avalanche have that clear advantage in being, you know, used to it, but it's even at a higher altitude where we are now.
Are the players concerned? I mean, obviously they're in great physical condition. They're elite athletes, but are they concerned by this? You know, are you getting a sense of that?
I don't think so. I mean, it's not like we're in, you know, Ecuador or yeah. You know, where it's really, really bad. I think there's going to be, like I said, again, mindful. I'm sure like us, you know, they're staying super hydrated, because that's a very important thing at this level or at this altitude. And you know, they've got a, you know, pretty, you know, they've got a highly professional staff of trainers and everybody around them. So I think it should work out fine.
Lisa, you wrote about Cal Peterson recently, and the Kings picked up that big 6-3 win over the Calgary Flames. Cal Peterson had a really impressive performance. He's a guy that's played a little bit for the Kings the last couple of years, but for the most part, he's been in the American Hockey League with the Ontario Reign. Just how nice is it for him? Obviously, you know, with Jack Campbell moving on, Cal Peterson's getting an opportunity to play some NHL games and obviously playing well.
Yeah, I'm going to be writing about him again. Well, probably a lot before the end of the season. But one thing that, you know, he'd come up and had 11 appearances his last season, and a shutout in his third start. And so he really did seem NHL ready at that point. So this year, when he went back to Ontario, I think, you know, a couple of things, you know, weighed in his mind, like when was he going to get back to the NHL level? And Ontario is a young team. They're cycling through a lot of people, a lot of players. A lot of players were coming up here, kind of a young, untested defense in front of him, and he was overplayed. They played him too much. So I think he got in a better mental space, you know, knew his time would come eventually, which it did, and had actually been playing quite well for Ontario in the time leading up. I like him. I mean, he's a very calm, collected customer. Just nothing really seems to faze him. You know, against the, you know, Flames, he had a, you know, puck handling gaffe behind the net, and actually, you know, he and Tom McClellan independently said that miscue almost was the turning point of the game, that the Kings, they realized they had to play for him, tightened up, and scored, you know, two goals in about a span of 40 seconds or so. And side note from him, I was asking some of the players if they had any military background in their family, and his late grandfather was a pilot in World War II and flew missions like over the Himalayas. I'm like, oh my goodness. So he said he was thinking he had his grandfather's flight jacket. And he was thinking of wearing it into the, you know, when they get off the bus and come into the stadium, wearing it as a tribute. And I hope he does do that.
No, Lisa, just, you know, following up on the goaltending, you know, I mentioned in the question, you know, Jack Campbell was traded along with Kyle Clifford to the Toronto Maple Leafs. What did you think about the return that, Rob Blake got there? Obviously, the Leafs were desperate. You know, Michael Hutchinson didn't have a really good game, you know, right before that trade was made. Did you like the return? Obviously, one of the picks is conditional. I believe if Jack Campbell plays six games and the Leafs make the playoffs, that third rounder can be a second rounder in 2021. Did you think Rob Blake got enough in that deal?
Yeah, I think he did. Goalie trades in season, especially for somebody who's not a starter or a 1A, so to speak, you know, the return is often not as much as you think it should be. So I think they did, you know, decently in this trade. You know, it's one of the things that Maple Leafs fans didn't seem to like it. The Kings fans didn't seem to like it. So maybe it was a fair value. the conditional pick is the key in my mind. And it's, you know, two of things, you know, Clifford re-signing would do it. And I think he has to win six games and they have to make the playoffs. So no small thing, of course. And, you know, he's won two already. And I think he's starting, I don't know if it's tonight or tomorrow. I don't have their schedule right in front of me. So he seems to be clicking those wins off pretty, pretty quickly there. So back to your question, it's like, you know, like I said, the fans were not, you know, you took two heart and soul players out of the Kings room, especially in Kyle Clifford, who was part of the two cups. So that seems, you know, there was an emotional attachment, I think, to the fans on that part, to him. So, you know, but realistically, I do think, like you said, it was a fair value.
Lisa Dillman is our guest on the line. Lisa joins us from Colorado Springs, where the Kings are going to battle the Colorado Avalanche tonight in an outdoor game at the Air Force Academy. After that, the Kings come to Winnipeg on Tuesday night to face the Jets. The trade deadline at that point in time will be 6 days away. And Lisa, it seems as though it's not a matter of if, but when, if you believe the chatter, Alec Martinez, speaking of heart and soul players for the Los Angeles Kings, that he gets dealt at the deadline. He's got 1 year left on his deal after this season. You know, beyond the on-ice performance, what is a team acquiring when they get a player like Alec, or when they get an Alec Martinez if he does get traded at the deadline?
You know, I think it's a lot like Jake Muzzin. Although this trade would be happening a lot, you know, closer to the deadline. Jake Muzzin moved, you know, in January of last, you know, last season. So yeah, like once again, somebody who holds his teammates accountable, supportive, almost like a mentor to the younger players, like the Matt Roys and Curtis McDermott's and Sean Walkers are learning from him. And I think Jake Muzzin is actually, you know, kind of carrying out that same role with the younger players, probably the forward and the D there in Toronto. So you get somebody, you know, he's the kind of guy who says the right thing at the right time. He can be quite sarcastic, and if you don't know him, you're thinking, "Geez, this guy's what's the deal here?" And then you get to know him, and you just know it's his way of teasing, you know, reporters, teammates, trainers, etc. And you cannot argue with his winning pedigree. I mean, the Stanley Cup clinching goal against the Rangers. Winning goal in the Western Conference Final against Chicago. I think it still haunts Blackhawk fans, of course, probably always will. So a guy who can come up and play on the big stage, and even like he's a guy that really recognizes his responsibilities. I mean, last season, you know, yet another dismal season, he went and played for Team USA over in the World Championships, and you know he didn't have to do that, but you know they called him, and you know he picked up the phone and went over to Europe.
Elisa, we mentioned earlier you're in Colorado Springs right now, but we wanted to ask you kind of more so about what the vibe is in Los Angeles with this Kings team. Obviously, you know, it's been disappointing when you consider, you know, their last place in the Pacific Division, but I don't think many people expected them to be a top team in the Pacific Division. But do most Kings fans realize that, I guess, that this year is something that you have to go through? I guess what I mean is, I mean, the expectations were low. You've got a lot of good young prospects in the system. Obviously, Alex Turcotte is one of those good young prospects, but, you know, you're going to get a high first round pick. We don't know exactly what that pick is going to be, but it could always be, you know, first overall. Are Kings fans still optimistic, or what's the vibe there in LA about how this season has gone?
Well, I guess this gives me a chance to sort of do a promotion for The Athletic. our analytics whiz Dom put a poll out in the field about fan satisfaction, and he did one at the start of the season, and then we just did one right after the Clifford trade, and the numbers are surprisingly, I wouldn't say, you know, supportive, but I think there is a logic. The fans see the logic, and that patience is advised, and that rebuilds don't happen overnight. That there is going to be some, you know, pain going on, and frustration, and some tough results with some of these prospects, you know, taking their lumps along the way. It's interesting. I think there's a real split when if you happen to look at Twitter or message boards, you think, you know, everybody is calling for the, you know, management to be fired. They want this person. They want everybody traded. But then when you go out into the concourse, you talk to people who've been season ticket holders from the LA Forum days. I run into athletic subscribers, and they seem to sort of recognize that how hard it is to win in the NHL. And this is a team that managed to win two cups in three seasons and reach the Western Conference Final in another. I mean, Chicago, you know, Pittsburgh, you know, teams do not win twice in a short period of time. And you know, everybody knows how hard it is to win. And I think the longtime fans realize that and are prepared to sort of be in there for the long haul.
Lisa Dillman covers the Los Angeles Kings for The Athletic. She joins us from Colorado Springs, where the Kings and the Avalanche will do battle at an outdoor game at the Air Force Academy later on tonight.
Those King jerseys look sick. I love those.
You mean sick in a positive way.
Oh, yeah.
They kind of grown on me. I've gotten to like them, too. You know, but it is kind of funny watching the coaches and some of the staff walk around in these big white, jackets. They look like big marshmallows.
is there an excited vibe in Colorado Springs? I mean, this isn't a place that sees NHL hockey ever. So, I mean, is there a excited vibe at the Air Force Academy for tonight's game?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was hard to tell. I just got into town, you know, the day before yesterday, late at night, and I was there for availability when they practiced yesterday. And you know, fans weren't. It wasn't like an open practice where fans were on hand. But you know, I was just eating breakfast here at the hotel, and I ran into two Kings fans that made the trip from Orange County here, and they were so excited. Like, it was about 9 o'clock and they couldn't wait to, you know, get over to the stadium. I said, we might want to wait a little while longer. You know, the game's at 6.
They'd be a little bored at
warm.
That point. Yeah.
Stay yeah, warm. And the man, the gentleman was a veteran, and you know, so everything appealed to him. So, and you know, and hockey in Colorado is big. You know, it's booming, and you know, the colleges are vibrant, and the youth programs are, you know, our Ryan Clark from our staff did a piece on hockey's evolution in Colorado, and here I'm doing another promotion. I'll stop.
That's
after
okay.
This one.
You're fine.
But I'll know a lot more after today. And it's really too bad that the Kings aren't, you know, having a better season in terms of the drama and something really being at stake for them. I mean, the Avalanche, different story, of course. But I've done three. This will be the third game involving the Kings outdoors that I've covered. I did the Dodger Stadium one. I did the one in Santa Clara, and this one. And they're all special in their own ways.
Lisa Dillman covers the Los Angeles Kings for TheAthletic.com. The Kings in town Tuesday night to face the Winnipeg Jets. Lisa, appreciate it. Stay hydrated, and all the best with the altitude and getting used to that.
Well, thank you very much, and anytime. And thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Our pleasure, Lisa. Thanks so much. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we talk about the Wild Penguins trade and look at the latest trade rumors from around the NHL with 9 days to go until the trade deadline. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The Penguins have acquired Jason Zucker from the Wild in exchange for Alex Galchenyuk, a conditional 2020 first-round pick, and prospect Kalen Addison. The first-rounder could move to 2021 if the Penguins miss the playoffs and decide to push it back a year. Zucker has spent his entire 9-year career with Minnesota, where his 132 career goals are fourth most all-time in franchise history.
The trades are only going to ramp up from now until the deadline. That's next Monday, 9 days away. Coverage all day long, of course, here on TSN Radio 1290. Everyone keeping a close eye on what the Jets are going to do, if they're going to do anything.
James Duffy is ready to go.
He is. I'm sure he's also ready for everybody to stop making trades until next Monday. But this week, it usually does get a little bit busier. Although, I got to say, it doesn't seem like it's got the same level of excitement this year, for whatever reason, as in past years.
Well, there aren't any big names.
Well, I mean, the biggest name is Chris Kreider, who looked really good against the Jets on Tuesday night.
Yeah, well, Chris Kreider is a great player, but that's not what you would call a big name. Like, you know, you forget, even though there were some moves that didn't happen, mm-hmm. Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky were at the top of the trade bait board last year. And obviously, you know, Jarmo Kekalainen decides to hang on to those guys and they go on and they beat the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round, right? But those guys were out there. You had Kevin Hayes out there. You had Mark Stone out there.
Yeah. There was probably, you're right, there were more names last year than there are this year, with it being Kreider and Alec Martinez are probably right at the top of the trade discussions.
Right, Drew, and also Taylor Hall was traded long before the trade deadline, right?
Sure.
Like, that was over a month ago now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Taylor Hall would have been a big name, and obviously there's some good players, but, I mean, how many of these players are going to move the needle? Like, sure, Chris Kreider can definitely solidify your top six. And, you know, you hear there's a bunch of teams that want him. But some of these other players, I mean, like...
Do you think the Rangers are better off... Let's talk about Kreider. Do you think the Rangers are better off...
Kreider's a really good player.
Keeping him and re-signing him? Or are they better off trading him?
Well, it depends how long you're going to sign him for, right? Because Chris Kreider's how old? 28?
28 years old.
So, I mean, Kreider's probably looking... Like, this could be his last big payday, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and he's having a good year.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so, I mean, Kreider's the type of guy that, you know, he's very durable. You know, obviously, you know, can play that physical type of game, but he's a goal scorer, but he can also set up plays. Like, to me, he's like a perfect second line guy that can play on your first line. Like, he's not a guy that's necessarily a driver, but, you know, really good skater, just a smart hockey player. The type of guy, I mean, you go back, I mean, people forget, I mean, feel like the Rangers have been this mediocre bad team forever, but it wasn't too long ago that the Rangers were making the playoffs year after year, and Chris Kreider, you remember, you know, that history with the Montreal Canadiens sliding into Carey Price, but
sure.
This guy to me is like a player that's built for the playoffs. Like, when I think of Chris Kreider, I put him in the same category as a guy like Ryan O'Reilly. Like, obviously, you know, Kreider's a winger and Ryan O'Reilly's a center. But what I mean is, like, it seems like those are the types of guys that turn up their games in the playoffs. And Kreider can really help a team out. And, you know, you might have to give up a late first round pick, because most likely a team that's going to acquire him is going to be, you know, a team that isn't going to have a high first round pick in the draft. So, absolutely, I think, you know, he could really improve a team's forward depth. You know, whether he plays on the second line or third line, and you hear, you know, Boston, because he's from Mass, mm-hmm. you know, that maybe Boston might want to acquire him, or you hear maybe, you know, Colorado is in on him, or there's a bunch of teams. J.G. Pageau is a guy that's been linked to Colorado. He makes a lot of sense, with Nazem Kadri out for 4 to 6 weeks, right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, when you're talking about Kreider and Pageau, though, I mean, these just aren't guys that I think fans are going to get really excited about. And I think that's what you were alluding to. There doesn't seem to be the buzz, maybe. And that's maybe because we're in Winnipeg as well, and we don't have the same buzz that we did in previous years, where it was all about second line center. Who are the Jets going to acquire? And then it would look like Mark Stone was going to come to Winnipeg, you know, hometown boy. It looked like, you know, that was maybe a move that was going to happen. So when you're talking about Paul Stastny, Mark Stone, I mean, these are bigger names, with all due respect.
Yeah, no.
Than Chris Kreider. So I think that has a little bit to do with it.
That's fair. Fair analysis on your part there, Mr. Ginsburg. This segment of the program, I should mention, brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town. He's been playing to sold-out shows for the past 2 weeks. Dave Hempstead, tickets available, not very many tickets, but some tickets available at rumorscomedyclub.com. Get them now before it's too late. You know, you're right there, Ezzy. You mentioned, you know, that it's here in Winnipeg with the Jets not looking like a juggernaut, which is being polite, looking like a fringe playoff team. The question isn't as who are they going to acquire, like it was to put them over the top, like we saw a couple years ago, or we knew last year they would acquire somebody. now, I mean, if the Jets went out and tried to acquire a second line center, everyone would be perplexed by that decision because it doesn't seem to be their most glaring need. That's clearly the defense. Do you think the Jets go out and get Alec Martinez? Who do you think, if you had to pick one defenseman, based on the defensemen that are available on, that are talked about as being available, Martinez, Sammy Vatten, Brendan Dillon, we know the names. You know, who do you think makes the most sense for the Jets, given fit and what it would cost in return?
I really like Josh Manson. And, you know, you hear that he might be available. And, you know, Andre Kasha is another guy that his name has been out there. I don't know why the Ducks would want to trade Andre Kasha. He's a great player. But to me, Josh Manson's a guy that can play in your top four. Physical defenseman. I mean, he's a guy that maybe his offensive numbers haven't been there this year, but I think he had 30 points a couple of years ago. So to me, Josh Manson makes a lot of sense. I mentioned before, Drew, Dylan DeMello is a guy that I would have no problem with him playing, you know, 12 to 15 minutes, maybe even more in my top six. Brendan Dillon is a guy maybe that's kind of on that second tier. I mean, Alec Martinez, to me, no problem with him. I just don't, I wouldn't want to give up too much. Like second round pick for Alec Martinez could be a little high. I mean, Jansen Harkins was a second rounder in 2015. Like, you can get good players in the second round. And I'm not saying that Alec Martinez isn't a good player. All I'm saying is, like, I would probably be a little bit more comfortable with, you know, a tier two prospect, like a B prospect and a third rounder.
And that, which, or, is what, which would probably get you more of a guy like Dylan DeMello than it would get you.
Like, right.
I'm saying the
asking price, it depends what the asking price is. But yes, I mean, Alec Martinez, if the Jets acquire him, because of the lack of depth they have kind of on, in their, you know,
play both sides,
bottom pairs.
Yeah.
I would have no problem with Alec Martinez, but, you know, if I had my pick of the litter, I'd probably say Josh Manson, Dylan DeMello.
DeMello going to cost you a lot less than a guy like Manson, right, is. Manson still have 2 years under his deal, you know, if I think at $4.1 million per season. Like we say, 9 days away, coverage for now all the way through. You know where it is, here on TSN Radio 1290. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Mike McKenna. He's a Vegas analyst, covers the Golden Knights. We'll talk to him about the team in La La Land. Yeah, that's Los Angeles, in Vegas, whatever Vegas is called. Sin City. There you go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number three. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. Quick Winnipeg Jets transaction note, a small one. Andre Chibasov has been loaned back to the Manitoba Moose. The Moose in action tonight, so it'll be an opportunity to get him some game action as he's been the Jets' healthy scratch. I would expect that right after the game, he'll be called back up to the Winnipeg Jets to potentially be their healthy scratch tomorrow night against the Chicago Blackhawks.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by Mike McKenna. Mike is a Vegas Golden Knights analyst. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Mike, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure, Mike. Right now, as we sit here on the 15th of February, the Golden Knights are holding down third spot in the Pacific Division, tied with the Edmonton Oilers, in fact, for second, but also tied for the with the Calgary Flames into a wild card spot. How would you say that this team's performance has changed since the coaching change?
Well, not greatly in some ways. You know, they went on a hot streak after the change initially happened. Cooled off a bit recently. There's been certain structural things and technical changes to the system that the team's made in terms of specialty teams with penalty kill, power play, a little bit different in the way that they're breaking out of their zone. So just in general, though, the overall vibe is just trying to make sure the team plays with the hungriness and the desire that the team was, that the Golden Knights have been known for so long, for the first, you know, 2.5 years, and trying to get back to that baseline. And had a big win against the Blues just this other evening in overtime. So matching up against good teams and trying to get points in those games.
If the coaching change hasn't dramatically changed the results, you know, does it make any more sense? Because I still sit here, you know, a couple months after the move went down, and I'm still perplexed by it. Being on the ground in Vegas, does it make any more sense now, you know, getting to live it day in, day out?
You know, these types of things are hard to quantify, but really what it comes down to, I think, is just trying. It was a huge attempt to try to get the players to wake up a little bit and realize that, hey, you know, we still have the identity that we need to be the Misfits. We need to be proving everybody wrong and have a chip on our shoulders. And in some ways, that seemed to have been somewhat lost. And you can't fire a whole team. So, and you know how that works in the salary cap world. It's just really, it's hard to make changes at times. So, unfortunately, you know, it seems like the way that it's going is that coaching changes are your easiest way to shake a locker room or make a change that you think might make your team more efficient. And they definitely, the Golden Knights definitely saw that bump, though. At first, when Pete DeBoer came in, got points in, I believe, 7 of 10 games right after.
You know, Mike, when you talk about that game against the St. Louis Blues, you know, obviously Zach Sanford was scoring on everything he touched, and that was a huge win for the Vegas Golden Knights. But that game just coming several days after, you know, the really scary incident that happened with Jay Bouwmeester, and obviously, you know, players across the league showing their support for Jay Bouwmeester, and obviously he's doing much better since that, as I mentioned, really scary incident. What was it like, you know, covering that game and just, you know, everything that was going on across the league with Jay Bouwmeester, a veteran for so many years in the league?
Well, those situations can be, they can be sad, they can be happy, they can be all over the place, and everybody responds differently to those things. And you know, I've got quite a few friends that are still playing on that Blues team, and we're very close when things happened, and they were rattled. Like, they will just straight up tell you that they were really shaken by what happened. But collectively, they all felt much better the next day when they had a chance to talk to Jay and at least get some screen time with him on video chat and have that, you know, collective feeling that, hey, things are going to be okay. Our buddy's all right. But it's still traumatic when you see something like that happen. And you know, even on my end, I was a 3-year teammate at St. Lawrence University of Rich Peverly, who had a similar incident happen to him in Dallas a couple of years ago. And it's just, it brings your own mortality into question at times, and you start to think big picture, which when you're trying to prepare for a hockey game isn't necessarily the mind frame that you want to be in. But I was impressed with both teams, though. They both came out and had a lot of moxie, and it was a really spirited and emotional and intense hockey game. You know, from a fan aspect, it was great to watch, but you knew that there was the underlying storyline of what had been going on. And, you know, even up on the concourse, the Golden Knights fans and Blues fans all signing a banner for Jay Bouwmeester, which to me was just the ultimate sign of the hockey family.
And that's great. And we obviously just hope that, you know, his recovery keeps going well, and we're glad that he's doing better. I think I speak for everyone here when I say that. And, you know, big game coming up tonight for the Vegas Golden Knights at home against the New York Islanders, 5 games before the trade deadline, Mike. And, you know, what do you think we can expect from Kelly McCrimmon prior to the trade deadline? Obviously, last year, you know, big move bringing in Mark Stone. I don't think we're expecting any big moves like that. But do you think it's going to be much more quiet this year for Kelly McCrimmon?
Well, I'd be surprised if you get a splash like a Stone or a Pacioretty, two of the bigger ones. But I wouldn't put anything out of the question, though, because this team is in a win-now mode. The Golden Knights know that they have a lineup that right now is really good and probably could be improved in certain areas. I'm not sure what that may be. But, again, it's so hard to move pieces around with the cap. And do you want to give up prospects? You know, they've given up some of those picks and prospects previously in those two big trades that we mentioned. So there's definitely a delicate balance for them to work with here, because they need to start compiling young talent through their own system. But it's juxtaposed by trying to win now. So, you know, there's always been talk of maybe needing a mobile defenseman. Maybe the goaltending is something they would look at for an upgrade. But, you know, it's really tough to say, again, with the cap, who can ever predict anything. But I think if there's something on the table that they think that the Golden Knights front office thinks can make the team better, then they'd be willing to make that trade.
Mike McKenna is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Mike is a Vegas Golden Knights analyst. And Mike, you mentioned the goaltending, and we know the numbers this year have not been flattering. I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury leads the team with a .904 save percentage, and that's not good enough to get it done. Is there any reason to think that this Golden Knights team is going to turn it around, or the goaltending situation for this Golden Knights team is going to turn around anytime soon?
Well, it has gotten him 21 wins, though. So
fair enough.
You know, I mean, it's getting it done. But, you know, it's been an interesting scenario, because defensively the team has not been great. They've missed assignments. There's been open players. There was a complete overhaul of the defensive structure that happened in mid to late November. So there's been a lot to work with there. But really with Marc-Andre, what's been surprising is that his save percentage has dropped by the month. Every month it's gone down, down, down. And you've seen glimmers of his game, but right now he just seems to be chasing a little bit. You know, he wants so desperately to do his best and make the saves that, you know, he's pressing a little bit. So he's been through the ringer before, though. He knows what he can work on and improve, and he's addressed it. And so, you know, you're looking to see down the road him going back to what you'd expect, more in the 9-14-15 range on a save percentage. And and you know, for Malcolm Subban, the last game against St. Louis, it's a 6-5 win. You look at the score sheet and think, man, five goals against, and then you watch what happened. You know, the eye test really matters for these things. So I think that, you know, down the road here, there's definitely a desire to get Marc-Andre back to the elite status of what he's played previously, and he's plenty capable. He's proven that he can do it.
Mike, we wanted to ask you about Jonathan Marcia. So Jets fans are really familiar with him, dating back to a couple of years ago when the Golden Knights beat the Jets in the West Final. Marcia So was a top player, still is a top player, scored a couple of goals in that game we were talking about against the Blues. And I think Marcia So himself would probably admit that earlier on this season, maybe he wasn't getting the results, but as of late, he's been really on fire. I mean, is this just a player that knows this is crunch time and he knows that he's relied upon for goals for this team?
He is, but right now it's just a matter of things clicking for him. You know, you always look at underlying statistics with stuff when it comes to this. What's his shooting percentage at? Is he getting shots? Where are they coming from? All his metrics are pointing towards him still scoring and still being, you know, really involved with the team. And I don't think there was ever really a big downturn with him, but he's somebody who really relies on his emotion. When he gets angry and when he's upset with what's going on, I mean, he might sit in the box for a couple minutes, but he's going to come out and score two goals. You know, he plays way better with a burr under his saddle. And it seems like right now that, yeah, he has kicked it into that extra gear, knowing what's on the line that, hey, you know, it's not October anymore. We're closing in on the stretch here, and it's time to get everybody going. And he's been a leader for the team.
Mike, you mentioned the emotion, and then Marcia So plays with that emotion, and, you know, obviously a chip on his shoulder at times. You know, has the team lost that edge because they're no longer, you know, the expansion team? They're no longer the team that no one had any expectations for. Are the expectations and the fact that they're now considered, or they were considered, maybe one of the elite teams in the league, is that wearing on the players at all?
Well, that's something that really hasn't been discussed a lot, and I think there's some validity to it, that when you have expectations, it's hard to live up to them because there's only one expectation in the National Hockey League, and that's to win the Stanley Cup. And only one out of 31 teams do that. It's not easy to do. And, you know, in some ways, the Golden Knights have been something of a victim of their own success in that now, hey, like, we've got to do this year in and year out. So, I mean, personally, from an athlete's perspective, that's not easy to live up to. So you have to find ways to channel that and to put it aside and just play hockey and try to enjoy the moment. But it's certainly in the back of your head, you know, whether it's you need a new contract or whether the team's expected to win or there's going to be moves and trades if we don't, it starts to weigh on to people. And it's so easy to be the underdog, you know, and I, as a player, relished being the underdog. I thought that was the greatest thing because there were no expectations. You were consistently beating them. So it's definitely tough to play to that, but I think that the really elite teams, once they become comfortable in their own identity and who they are as an elite hockey team, as a contender every year, that pressure starts to go away.
You know, Mike, getting back to what we were talking about before about the underlying numbers, Jesse Granger of The Athletic wrote about this. If you look at the underlying numbers, the Vegas Golden Knights are elite at creating scoring chances in the slot, and they're also very good, you know, top five in the NHL when it comes to, you know, suppressing shots. So is that also something that the team knows in the back of their mind that the results are going to come if they continue to play the way they've been playing?
Well, they should. You know, that's what they all lead to. Pete DeBoer stressed, hey, if we play defense and we take care of our own end, we're going to get the offense. That's played completely true. I mean, the Golden Knights have not had problems scoring lately. They got shut out in Minnesota the other night when they were completely out of gas at the end of a road trip. Those things happen. Otherwise, they're still well over three a game. You know, they're getting plenty of 5-on-5 chances. So, they don't have like a true sniper in the sense of you know, an Ovechkin or a Tarasenko or someone. So the scoring is largely by committee. I don't think that they'll ever be a high percentage, you know, shooting team in that way, but they generate through volume. So if they continue to get shots, if they continue to defend well, and defending well is the, that's the piece of the puzzle that has to improve and has got to be better, then yeah, the team can be very dangerous.
Mike McKenna covers the Vegas Golden Knights. He's one of their analysts pregame, postgame, and during intermissions. Mike, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us to talk about the Golden Knights.
No problem. Anytime.
Take care, Mike.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks so very much.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
When we come back, apparently you're not allowed to kick an opponent, and that gets you suspended. Who knew? Not Zach Cassian, unfortunately, for the Oilers. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The Oilers can ill afford to lose another important forward from the ranks right now in the midst of an incredibly tight playoff race. When all hands are needed on deck, subtracting Cassian from an already depleted lineup leaves them in dire straits. Cassian averages fourth most even-strength minutes on the team among Oilers forwards, and his 14 even-strength goals are third on the team. His play has dipped a little recently.
TSN's Ryan Rashog talking about the absence of Zach Cassian and Connor McDavid from the Edmonton Oilers lineup. Cassian suspended for 7 games, that ruling coming out late yesterday, for kicking Eric Cernak of the Tampa Bay Lightning in a contest on, was that Tuesday night, I think, if I'm not mistaken?
Maybe sure.
Wednesday? Can't keep
tracking. Tuesday night, Wednesday night.
Same difference.
Yep.
Anyways, he kicked the player. Apparently, you're not allowed to do that, and you get suspended as a result. 7 games good? Too much? Too little? Right where you thought it would be?
Honestly, I expect, well, we knew it was going to be at least 6, right?
Well, that's because the NHL offered Zach Cassian an in-person
right.
hearing, which means that's
right.
the minimum. If
it's
you
6.
Offer that, that means you can go over 6 games.
Right. So we knew it wasn't going to be 3. So,
yeah.
You know, maybe I was thinking at most 10. A couple of weeks back, we talked about Zach Cassian, Matthew Tkachuk, and then they end up fighting. Obviously, you know, Cassian is a noted enforcer.
Gets 2 game suspension Tkachuk, for that one.
Right. You know, and I had no problem with that, even though it obviously has nothing to do with the game. But this is just flat out unsafe. It's
yeah.
dangerous. Like, you can't just do that. And I don't know, understand why Zach Cassian didn't just man up and say, yep, I made a mistake. Like, I'll take my suspension. Like, the fact that he, and I read, you know, might have been in The Athletic that, you know, he was saying that he was just trying to kind of, you know, get himself out of that scrum or kick him. It's like, you cannot kick another player. And the reality is, Eric Cernak, if he gets him a little bit higher, if that turned out to be some type of injury, like he cuts him or something like that,
yeah.
then you're talking about probably 20 or 30 games.
Well, you know, it is fortunate. So Cassian gets him in the shoulder pads, which of course includes
right.
the chest protection.
Yep.
So there is no damage to Cernak.
It's just a stupid it's a stupid play, Drew, and it has nothing to do with the play. Like, that's what I don't get. I don't understand why he didn't need to do that at all. Like, I didn't see the lead up. Like, I don't know if Eric Cernak and him, you know, had, you know, some physical altercations. It doesn't even matter.
Guys get tangled
just don't
up.
Don't do it.
Guys get tangled up all the time. You know, you're playing a rough game. You're playing a physical game. Guys fall upon each other. You never see other guys kicking their legs like you're a duck, you know, trying to get up and stay afloat. It's just something that isn't done. There's
I remember back in the day, remember, I mean, this is going back, what, late 90s, early 2000s. Remember Chris Simon on the bench?
Yeah.
And Chris Pronger, there was a suspension.
I think Pronger got suspended 2 separate times for kicking somebody.
But it was more stepping.
Yeah.
It wasn't
using your skate blade to jab somebody like a knife.
And, you know, I'm not laughing. It's just like, when I saw that, obviously it was on social media right
yeah.
before, you know, it started to appear on, you know, TSN and all that. But, like, I was just watching that thinking to myself, like, what is Cassian thinking? Like, maybe he wasn't thinking.
Well, he clearly
it's just stupid. Like, it's dangerous, like I said, and, you know, let's move on.
So, to compound the problem, it's, of course, Connor McDavid no longer in the Oilers lineup. He's out 2 to 3 weeks with a bruise, a contusion
yep.
In his thigh. What happens to the Oilers over the next 2 to 3 weeks? I mean, Zach Cassian, you know, you don't necessarily think of him as a key member of that forward group, but he has been this year. He's sort of, this is a guy who has had some substance abuse issues. He's been able to conquer those demons, and good for him for doing so. And he's been able to be a key member, a key contributing member to a pretty thin Oilers forward group. So what happens to the Oilers over the next couple weeks, over the next few weeks, without McDavid and without Cassian? Thank God for them, of course, that they still have Leon Draisaitl in the lineup.
Well, I mean, Cassian, I agree. He's been on that top line and he's had a nice season. But obviously, I mean, all due respect, he's a lot more replaceable than Connor McJesus, right? So when you're talking about the Oilers, I mean, they're going to miss him, and they've got back-to-back games coming up this weekend against Florida tonight and then Carolina on Sunday. And then you've got Boston and then Minnesota, who's fighting for their playoff lives. And then it gets a little bit easier next weekend. You know, I was looking at the schedule. They've got LA and then Anaheim going into next week. So
going into the trade deadline. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, it starts off the next five or six games, but you know, you'd have to think that Kenny Holland is looking to bring in someone. And, you know, I don't know if it's going to be a Chris Kreider. I don't know if it's going to be a JG Pageau or some of the bigger name guys, but you have to think with McDavid, and it's only two to 3 weeks, but that's still, you know, seven or eight games. Sure. And you don't have Cassian for seven or eight games. So, you know, you're going to get, you know, some opportunities for other forwards on the Oilers, but you know, you'd have to think that Ken Holland is going to be active because they're right in the thick of the playoff race.
He was probably going to be active regardless of the suspension and the injury. You thought that if you looked at the Oilers lineup, you'd said, you know, yeah, they're going to need to upgrade. Oh, they could upgrade on the defense too, but that the forward would certainly fit in with taking a little bit of the pressure off of Draisaitl and off of McDavid. And now without McDavid and without Cassian in the lineup, it becomes that much more of a priority. Again, I think the Oilers are fortunate to some extent that the Western Conference is just so terrible this year.
Yeah,
nobody wants to make the playoffs in the West. Apparently, I mean, the Oilers are, you know, they don't have a buffer. They've got a couple points of a buffer, but the Western Conference is just so bad and nobody wants to snatch opportunities.
I think the entire league isn't very good this year. I mean, the Eastern Conference is very top heavy.
Fair enough.
I mean, you look at the bottom, Detroit, Ottawa, and New Jersey in the East. It's not exactly like, you know, the East has 10 Stanley Cup contenders, right?
I could see a wild card team in the East, though, pulling off an upset more than I could see a wild card
team. Like Columbus last year,
right? More than I could see a wild card team from the West pulling off an upset.
I agree with that 100%. And, you know, Kyler Yamamoto has played really well since he was recalled from the American Hockey League. He's playing on that top line with Nugent Hopkins, and you mentioned Draisaitl, but, I mean, there's other opportunities for players such as Alex Chiasson, Riley Sheahan. I mean, like, other guys are going to have the opportunity to provide offense. I think the Oilers will be all right. Like, but, you know, whether or not, you know, they're going to be a playoff team, I mean, Vegas is obviously that team that's chasing them and, you know,
they're tied in the standings.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, they could still win first in the Pacific. They could finish out of the playoffs. Like right now, it's completely wide open. We talked about the schedule. It's a little bit difficult here in the next three or four games. It starts to get a little bit easier, but, you know, it's wide open in that Pacific.
That's it for the Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. A big thank you to all of our guests. Scott Billick joined us. Lisa Dillman joined us. We are joined by Mike McKenna and Ben Pope. If you missed any of the program, if you missed any of those interviews, they'll be available on the podcast at illegalcurve.com. It's on tsn1290.ca. It's wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us. Let us know what you think of the program. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean Assor doing a great job behind the board. For Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.